Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Matt DeFrance of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joined by Nathan Mills, also the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And Nathan, it has been a little bit of time since we convened for a good old chat about the St. Louis Blues. Some has changed, some has not, but for the most part, you know, we're past the trade deadline. We're a few weeks out from the Olympic break, and the Blues have played pretty good hockey. What has been the biggest thing that's jumped out to you since the trade deadline or the Olympic break?
How much I missed you since the last time we did one of these episodes.
I mean, we knew that.
That's the biggest thing. Besides the obvious, I'll tell you, I watched that game on February 26th, the first game back from the Olympic break, and I thought to myself, oh, these guys are going to do it again, you know? And then they, not quite, the next game, but then the following game started the 7-game point streak, and I thought, oh no, they really are going to do it again. And this time it's going to be like last year. It felt so good, you know, to see that happen. This year it was like, no, that's not what we want this year, you know. So I don't know, that was the biggest thing to me, was just how quickly after all the change, things kind of seemed to really steady, which was not what I expected, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think anyone, I mean, Blues fans that have, I don't know if the worst intentions is quite the right description, but Blues fans who have seen this before in the last few years, they probably knew some sort of run was coming. But with this team, that was worse than any of the recent teams, I don't know if we quite saw this sort of stretch coming. And in a year where they're at the break, they're second worst team in the league, and then they come out of it, they go 7-1-1, 7-2-1 now after the loss in Winnipeg on Sunday. But they've just played pretty decent hockey with some pretty elite goaltending behind them, save for that Winnipeg game where Jordan Bennington made 13 saves on 16 shots. But other than that, the tandem of Joel Hofer and Jordan Bennington has been among the league's best in a lot of different categories, and the results have followed there. Now, in the bigger picture, you're right. I'm sure there's a ton of Blues fans that are saying, hey,
yeah,
knock it off now, guys. We got a top pit to protect. So we'll see how it all shakes out, and if they cool off and if they can sink back down to second worst team in the league, or if they'll kind of stay in that five range right now.
Yeah, I can't imagine being in the locker room, being in the front office and having to walk that line, like, you know, knowing realistically where you're at, but also having to go out there and try to win a hockey game every single night, whether that's as a player actually on the ice or the people who are putting those players on the ice. I you know, it's easy to sit here and talk about it. I would hate to be the one doing it.
Yeah, and I've always thought this about, you know, tanks, so to speak, that it's managements and ownerships that choose to lose games, and it's players and coaches that try to win games. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Right?
Like if you assemble a roster a certain way, like the Sharks and the Blackhawks have in the last few years, you do it because you're trying to kind of bottom out to get one of those top picks. And the players that are on that roster, they don't care about the top pick, yeah, especially if they're older veteran guys like the Blackhawks have brought in before. They don't care about being the worst teams of the franchise can draft first overall. So these players and Jim Montgomery and his staff right now, they're trying to win games. I mean, they have numbers to protect. They have contracts to earn. They have, honestly, you look at a guy like Jim Montgomery, he hasn't missed the playoffs in whatever league he's coaching in about 16 years, since he was an assistant coach at RPI. Since then, when he was in the USHL in college hockey and the NHL, he's made the postseason every single year since then. So this is an unfamiliar territory for Jim Montgomery. I'm sure he's a guy who wants to keep winning. Now, we got a little bit of a taste of how far they had come when they won at home the other night against Edmonton, coming back from 2 down in the third period to win in overtime. And at that point, they were 5 points out of a playoff spot. And you kind of saw, yeah, still a huge climb, but they were 14 points out at the break. Like, that's a huge cut in a short amount of time. And we've seen these guys get hot before. Then they lose in Winnipeg. Now they're seven out. You know, there's 15 games left. What was always unlikely now looks just about as unlikely, right? And it's time to, oh, thoughts?
Well, listen, we've said all I'm saying is we've said unlikely before. Like, we were just talking about how unlikely this particular run, even though it's changed the standings, but it hasn't put them in the playoffs or anything to that effect, how unlikely this run has been. You say unlikely, like stranger things have happened, So, like, yeah, it's incredibly unlikely, but well, I don't know, man. I hate to bet against it. Every time I start saying, they can't do it, they do, which is great, except for, now when you want them to get that top pick.
Yeah, and I guess the good thing, so to speak, is that they are still fifth from the bottom right now. And they were second before Calgary, Chicago, and the Rangers are now below them in the standings. And it is possible for more jockeying to happen in the last 15 games among those teams right there. So it's not a foregone conclusion that, you know what, they're going to keep winning. They're going to be not make the playoffs. They're going to be at number 10 overall, and they're not going to get the pick they need. For all the winning that they've done, they're still fifth from the bottom right now. So that's a little bit about the post-break play. I'm sure we'll touch on it a little bit later, but wanted to circle back to the trade deadline and what did happen, what didn't happen. Now, the deadline is about 10 days in our rearview mirror right now. But the Blues made a couple of trades. They traded Braden Schenn to the Islanders for a first round pick, a third round pick, a prospect, goaltending prospects, and Jonathan Drouin. And they also traded Justin Falk to the Detroit Red Wings for a first round pick, a third round pick, a forward prospect, and then Justin Hull, defenseman. So those two moves are the ones they made. Before we get to the ones that didn't happen, what were your thoughts on the ones that actually did, the Shen trade and the Falk trade?
I like them. I like both of them. listen, the Blues have, after having kind of an embarrassment of riches when it came to goaltenders, have identified an area that they could maybe strengthen a little bit. So getting Marcus, is it Gidloff? Is that how you pronounce his
I
name?
believe so.
Yeah, getting him, I think, could be a big deal. He's only 20 years old, and yeah, not dominated, but has looked really good in Sweden's top professional league. So I think that's a good move. Draft picks always good. I always feel good about draft picks with Armstrong. We'll see how Steen does with them, but I feel like, we've had some of this continuity here with them, with him kind of sitting under the learning tree a little bit. So I feel good about those. And then you look at the Falk deal, same sort of setup, where, it's less young player oriented, I guess, and more about the draft picks, same deal. I think when you're looking to build your next young core, pile as many assets as you can, and when you're going to have that many draft picks in the first three rounds, you take, buy a few more lottery tickets. I think that's a good strategy to take. The one that got away is the killer.
Yeah, and when I think about the returns on these trades, I think back to the last sell-off that the Blues had, and this was in 2023. It's when they traded Tarasenko and Mikkola to the Rangers. They traded O'Reilly and Achari to the Maple Leafs and Barbashev to the Golden Knights. Now, you look at the returns that they got during that time, and that Tarasenko Mikkola deal was a first, a third, Hunter Skinner, your minor league defenseman, and Sammy Blais, a roster player. So if you look at it like that framework of a first, a third, a prospect, so to speak, and a roster player, that's what the Blues just got twice. And back in 2023, that was the entire Tarasenko and Mikkola trade. Like, that was both of them going to the Rangers for that return. So it speaks to me about how different the market was this time around than it was 3 years ago. And I think you saw that, in the Shen deal in particular, I've always held the belief that Braden Shen means more to the Blues than he does any other franchise. And I know that sounds pretty straightforward at as you say it, but I mean, he's a 45-point center for the most part. Like for the last few years, about a 45-point center, making 6.5 for another 2 years after this one. Like those numbers don't really add up, right? On the open market, he's not worth that. The contract isn't a, it's not a an albatross by any means, but it's not a positive value contract. And given that, plus the value that the Blues holds for him internally, in that he was their captain, he was kind of a connector in the room. The way that he played, the grit, the style, the hitting, the fighting, like that's something that means something to the Blues as an organization. He cares about the past of the team, the history of it, the old members, the retired numbers, the Hall of Famers, all of that matters to Braden Shen. And so I've always kind of thought that he mattered more to the Blues than he did to any other team. And because of that, the Blues would place a pretty pr high price on him that wouldn't really match what externally people would see. Like that's kind of where I thought about it for the last few years. And clearly, the New York Islanders were willing to pay a hefty price of a first, a third, a goalie prospect, and a roster player. So that is, kind of a changing of the guard, so to speak, right now for the Blues when you think about their leadership core. Shen was obviously the captain. Justin Falk was an alternate captain. So there go two of the four guys that wore letters for you. Now, the other two guys that wore letters before, they heard their names a lot during the trade deadline speculation. That's Colton Parayko and Robert Thomas. Now, Colton Parayko, we understand what the deal was, I guess. It was
Oh,
reported
what the
that
deal
the
wasn't,
Blues,
I think. That was it was
yeah, what the
right
deal
there.
wasn't. You're right.
We understand what the deal wasn't.
Right. The Blues and the Sabres reportedly agreed to a deal that included Colton Parayko. It would have net the Blues defenseman prospect Radim Mrkta, who was selected ninth overall last year and a first round pick from Buffalo, if Colton Parayko waived his no trade clause. Now, we all know that he did not. And him and the Blues agreed to that. Like, that's something that was written in his contract. Both sides agreed to it. I have no problem with it. Now, I think the real fireworks came afterward when Doug Armstrong said that he searched through his staff's phones for their phone calls, their text messages, their email records, just to make sure that none of the reporting was leaked out of the Blues side of things.
I don't know who leaked it. I can tell you for sure that it wasn't me. But I really liked that trade, man. Listen, I love Parayko, but that would have been the right move. It felt just so perfect, an absolute home run. And then it didn't happen. And this is kind of, one of these things that's kind of reared its head again with the Blues. Those no trade clauses, those no movement clauses, those have reared their heads a few times, whether it was players using them to block moves, or like in the case of, say, Alex Petrangelo, not getting one and getting one somewhere else and being willing to sign somewhere else because of that. So, it just kind of feels like another oof, oof, no trade clause kind of burns a move that maybe you might have wanted. But it is what it is. I agree with you. He's got it. Exercise it. Players should use every right afforded to them to, exercise as much autonomy as humanly possible.
Yeah, and I think we look back and it was Torrey Krug in 2023. It was Braden Schenn last year at the trade deadline. It was Colton Parayko at the trade deadline this year. Three guys that nixed trades that we know of. I'm sure there are other ones that we don't know of, but those are the three that we publicly know of. And I really don't have too much of an issue with the amounts of them that the Blues have. I think that's the price of doing business when you have players that are eligible for no trade clauses in their UFA years and that you've agreed to. Like, I don't think it's a big deal, to be quite honest. It is a bigger deal because the Blues have been trying to make changes that they can't, but that speaks more so to the overall roster construction than it does to the number of no trade clauses on the roster. That's what I think. Like, you know, you're not looking to trade these long tenure guys if your roster is constructed well. If you're playing well, if you're winning hockey games, like, those moves just aren't part of what you want to do. So I think it speaks more to that than it does to the amounts of them on the Blues, in my mind.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And it's the thing about them is especially when they leak like this, and this would speak to why Armstrong, you know, reportedly checked everybody's phones. These are failures, right, in roster construction, or at least admissions of failures, when they happen like this, and then they become very high profile public admissions of failures. That becomes the perception, right? It's like, oh, you know, they gave this deal out. They didn't think they'd ever want to get rid of him. Now they want to get rid of him. So this is a failure. You know, now he doesn't want to leave and they can't get rid of him. This, you know, it kind of expands and compounds upon itself. And so, yeah, I mean, I can understand why he would be upset, you know, if something like that came out from his side. And I, you know, I don't think the teams should stop giving them out either. Maybe try to do more, you know, partial no trade clauses if you can help it, just to give yourself a little bit of an out. But I understand, like I said, players should take every bit that they can in every contract that they get for as long as they possibly can.
Yeah. And, you know, the timeline of things happening. So the trade deadline was on a Friday. Pareko officially declined the trade on the Thursday. It was reported on Wednesday. Like, I wonder if it does go through, what does that mean for the rest of the Blues deadline? Like, specifically Justin Falk, because they were both right-handers playing the right side on defense, both veteran presences. Like, in that scenario, if they trade Pareko, do they keep Falk or do they actually still move him to kind of move out their two best right-handed defensemen, ask someone to either play their offside or Logan Mayhew to take big minutes? Like, it's, I wonder what the trickle down would have been, because it wasn't just going to be a decision for the rest of the season. It was going to be a decision for kind of next year too, what it looks like on the right side of the defense when you do have two guys that have anchored that for a while no longer there. And you know, that's why I kind of thought Pareko would stay in the first place. I thought Falk had more of a sell high attached to him, and if that they would trade him, they would keep Pareko, because they didn't want to trade both of their right-handers. But I do wonder if Pareko was the first one to be traded, if Falk would have stayed. Just revisionist there, we'll see.
Yeah, I've wondered too, not so much about whether Falk would stay, but if Pareko had been traded, if that would have changed, not just, you know, say the Falk move, but would, you know, Robert Thomas's name came up a lot, Binnington's name came up a lot, and, you know, in rumors and reporting, would that have would that have changed the calculus for them? You know, does that, or anybody else down the roster? So it, you know, I think it opened up a lot of possibilities for that, you know, 12-hour window while some folks on Twitter were dreaming, and then all those possibilities went away and we got what we got, you know, which, you know, I think it was, you know, like a B plus trade deadline, I think, something like that.
Yeah, good. Pretty good.
Maybe could have been better. Yeah.
I think it was pretty good. You mentioned Robert Thomas. Let's get to him. So his name was in trade rumors for the weeks ahead of the deadline as sort of it started out like, you know, the Blues are looking to make changes. You know, might they do Robert Thomas? It kind of got kicked into high gear when Elliot Friedman said that he thinks there's a decent chance that Robert Thomas gets traded by the deadline. Of course, that did not happen. The rumored teams that were interested, Buffalo, Utah, Detroit, Now, Robert Thomas himself said he never asked for a trade, and he said he was never asked to waive his no trade clause. So we didn't get that far down the negotiating process with other teams that the Blues did with the Parayko trade potential. So they talked about him, but they never got close enough to ask him.
Yeah. He there was some reporting about, you know, the Buffalo interest and you know, kind of some rumored targets for that, for such a deal, the same night that the Parayko news came out. And I started seeing all these like wild scenarios of basically combining the two, sending both Thomas and Parayko, and just, I mean, just obscene assets coming back to the Blues. And like, it just, you know, it was, I don't know, it was a good lesson in how quickly those things can kind of spiral online, you know. But I like Thomas. I'm glad he didn't move. I think it probably would have been if you were going to move away from him, probably the wrong time. So glad it never got that far.
Yeah, and he's come out of the break playing some of his best hockey. When he went into the break injured, he had a minor surgery to fix something on his leg, and had a brief leave of absence, came back, and has been the Blues' best player on the ice pretty much on a nightly basis. And that's with an injured hand right now. He can't take any faceoffs, but he's still part of a dynamic line with Dylan Holloway and Jimmy Snuggerud. Now, it's not to say that the Blues won't try again in the summer. And we saw with Braden Schenn, you know, once you get asked once to waive and you say no, and you get asked again, and there's no real inclination that they will stop asking, maybe yeah. you have that in your mind that you're no longer welcome in St. Louis. And so not saying that that's the case with Robert Thomas, but we do see where, you know, if you see your name there long enough, if you get asked enough times, potentially it becomes a reality. And with Robert Thomas, he's the best player on the team on one of the best contracts in the league. I don't see a scenario in which the Blues win that trade, but I guess there would be scenarios that didn't happen that the Blues would have won the trade, right? So like, that's why it didn't, because the Blues thought, hey, we need this really high price in order for us to win the trade. And every other team said, no.
No, thank you. We do not want to pay that price. You can keep your number one center. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I do wonder also how much the captaincy can impact the relationship between the Blues and Robert Thomas. Now, Doug Armstrong was asked about the captaincy moving forward after the trade deadline. And obviously they weren't going to name a captain throughout the rest of the year like that. Midseason captains don't get named. It's just not a thing that happens. And it was pretty clear they're going to go through A's the rest of the season. Now, those A's have gone to Jake Neighbors and Philip Robert. So the leadership group now looks like Robert Thomas, Colton Parayko, Jake Neighbors, and Philip Robert. And heading into the summer, the question is, well, what do they do with the captaincy? Do they keep going with alternate captains and do not name a captain? Do they name Robert Thomas a captain? He's been the one guy consistently in the last few years that wears a letter. When you think about it, Schenn will wear a C, Thomas wears an A, Parayko and Falk rotated depending on whether the game was at home or on the road.
Yeah.
But the entire time that Thomas was in the lineup, he would wear a letter. So judging by that, you think about how highly the Blues view him across the last few years. You know, they obviously went to Braden Schenn a few years ago when they named him captain instead of Robert Thomas. They could look at a guy like Jake Neighbors. Obviously, they think highly enough of him to be wearing a letter now. And that could be a potential future captain on the roster. And, you know, Parayko's there too. I don't know if the Blues have viewed him as the voice of the team, but he is the longest tenured member of the organization. By the time his career is over in St. Louis, he could be the player that plays the most games in a blue note. So they do have options. They have probably three guys they can name captain or not go with any of them. And I do wonder if the Blues name Robert Thomas captain, does that further entrench him in St. Louis?
Would be pretty hard, I would say, you know, on Thomas and Parayko in different respects, to put the C on a guy and then trade him shortly after putting the C on a guy and then trading him, you know.
This is a mistake on my part. I should say, like, if they were to trade him, it probably happened draft time-ish. And when they named Shen captain, it was right before training camp. So the timing of things would not be a situation where they would name him captain and then trade him. But maybe that's in discussions over the summer about the direction of the team and whether Thomas would entertain a trade elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all four of those guys have distinct ways of leading on the ice. And I think, you know, Parayko, I think, would still, you know, you've asked the guy if you can trade him once, at least once already. Maybe either you mend that bridge with the captaincy or you, you know, just don't go there considering you've
talked about it. Yeah, I mean, this is also an organization that's traded its last two captains, right? Brady
Shen got traded. Well,
Ryan O'Reilly got traded, and Alex Petrangelo left.
Maybe that makes him the favorite. I don't know, you know. But I don't think you could go wrong with any of those guys. The thing about the captaincy that's so weird is that, like, it doesn't matter who you pick. There's going to be a segment that loves it. That's the absolute best pick you possibly could have made. And a segment, oh, I can't believe it. You know, this is the worst possible pick. Doesn't matter who it is. You know, it's a matter of what the locker room, you know, can buy into. And the thing that is tough, you know, with losing Shen and Falk at the same time, and would have been tough if it had been, you know, Parayko in his place, is you don't replace that kind of leadership overnight. You don't replace that kind of experience overnight. And so even though, yeah, the Blues got some pretty nice assets for them, that's going to be where they really have sort of a vacuum, is not necessarily the captainship specifically, but in that leadership. So yeah, it's going to be key to see those guys step up, whether it's CEA or anything else, to be honest with you.
Sure. And the last topic here at the net front is the interview that Tom Stillman did with the Post-Dispatch and the Athletic last week. Sat down with him last Wednesday and chatted about the direction of the Blues. And my biggest takeaway from it was how young the team expects things to go. You know, my question going in was, how close are we to the beginning of the retool 3 years ago? Because that was when things first kind of got reset in St. Louis at that trade deadline, at the draft that summer. And it feels similar to that, in that they just sold at the deadline. They have three first round picks. It feels like you're back in that same place. And the distinction that Tom Stillman made in his discussions with us was that, they're back accumulating young assets, but the assets that they got a few years ago, they're 3 years older now. You know, they're a little bit more mature. Those three first round picks from 2023 are all in the NHL right now. Dalibor Dvorsky, Otto Stenberg, Theo Lindstein. And since then, they've got the offer sheets for Broberg and Holloway. They had the trade for Mayu. There's been the emergence of Hofer and Neighbors. So there's been some sort of development of that younger group since then. And, you know, the direction of the franchise right now, the way that Stillman described it to us, you know, 3 years ago, they had two tracks. They had the retool track of accumulating young assets, and they had the competitiveness track of wanting to try to make the playoffs and use veterans to steady the ship in the NHL until that point. Now, they're still trying to accumulate young assets, but they're asking those younger players to be part of the group that keeps them competitive. They're no longer leaning on the veterans to do that. They're asking Neighbors and Hofer and Broberg, Holloway, that group, to help them be competitive. So you know, the dirty little secret of a young team is that young teams are usually pretty bad, right? Yeah. And so it's not something where Tom Stillman's saying the team's going to be competing for a playoff spot or cup or anything like that, but it's not going so far as to say we're trying to lose. It's saying we're trying to win with this young group that's developing. It just happens that young groups lose a lot.
Yeah. You know, one of the I don't know, side effect, it's not necessarily a benefit, right? Because it doesn't happen for everybody, but sometimes those young cores, they come together, they develop together, and you end up with a championship or three, you know? So maybe down the line that becomes key. You know, I think there is some, I think you could make an argument that, you know, getting those guys more minutes now could be good for development. And maybe not necessarily speed the process, right? But improve the process, I guess, if that makes sense. And so, you know, maybe a lean year here, but it may be, we may reap some benefits from it down the road.
Yeah. And I think there's a possibility that in the fall, the Blues have 12 players, 25 or younger on their roster. It doesn't always shake out like this when you're doing kind of the back of the envelope math on things, but you look at Neighbors, Holloway, Snuderud, Stenberg, Dvorsky, Finley, Carboneau, whoever they draft in the first round this year, it's probably putting aside their run right now, let's say they're picking in the top five. That's their highest draft pick in 18 years. A lot of top five picks come into the league immediately. So I think I can't remember if I counted that one already or not, but Carboneau, that first round pick, Broberg, Lindstein, Mayhew, maybe Adam Juracek comes in, and that's a big group of players that can come in potentially and be part of the roster next season. So that would include a lot of first round picks. Now, does it shape out like that? I don't know. A lot of guys tend to go to the AHL first. But the way that the Blues have discussed internally Adam Juracek and Justin Carboneau this season and the years that they've had in junior hockey this season, there are some members of Blues management that believe that they can step in right away to the NHL.
I mean, listen, I say if they can hang, let's go. Get them NHL minutes, get them ready, get them used to the pace of the game and off and running. The faster you can start learning, I think the better you can be in the long run. And I think that's true across just about every sport. Get guys going and get them acclimated and get going. And I think that's the best way to go. You know, so if that means Carboneau goes to the AHL first, so be it. If that means he goes straight to the NHL, let's go.
Yeah, I think I agree with you to a point. Like, I think guys need to be ready for the level that they go to.
Yeah.
If you're not ready to succeed in the NHL, you're just going to be failing in the NHL. You should not be there. Like, you need to be somewhere that's going to be a place where you can thrive. And I think we've seen that. I wouldn't even say with Dvorsky right now, because he's not really thriving so much in the NHL, but they did keep him in the AHL when they didn't have to. So I would like to see maybe a little bit of a slow roll on some of their prospects, but if they think they're ready, then we might see them. Now, the other thing that Tom Stillman discussed with us was a little bit about the financial future of the team in the relative short term. Because if you do have a young team that loses a lot, that tends to impact attendance. If you have a regional television deal that is different than the one you currently have right now, because FanDuel is still not the most healthy financially, that probably results in a loss of revenue for the Blues there. And you add that to the rising salary cap, and you have a loss of some revenues, and you have an addition of some expenditures And that does not make a lot of good business sense.
No, no, it doesn't. And I'll tell you, not the most financially healthy is maybe the nicest way I've ever heard FanDuel described in its current situation.
Only in the fact that they went into bankruptcy and they came out of it. So they have been in a worse spot before.
Okay. Listen, that is a new way of looking at it for me, but I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I think it's great. You know, I tell you on that front, I have wondered if MLB might pick up the broadcast. I had seen that I think the Red Wings are doing that in partnership with the Tigers. So maybe that would be a way to go. But yeah, that's going to be trouble. You know, you've got this young roster that at some point you're going to have to supplement. You're going to have declining ticket sales probably, you know, as you alluded to, young team, not necessarily a good team. So that tends to lead to a fall off in revenues. So, you know, you've got all that going on while the salary cap is rising. It's probably a tenuous time to be an NHL hockey owner in the middle of beginning of a rebuild, retool. What is it? I don't even know reword it is this time.
Yeah. And I think the one thing that can help the Blues is that if their lineup is so young, that means they're going to be cheap as well. So I don't believe that they'll be at the salary cap because, you know, I don't think they'll have the players making enough money to be at the salary cap. So
yeah,
that would be something to look forward to. But even with the potential financial issues ahead, Tom Stillman ensured that the Blues will be fine. They have sources of liquidity. They'll be just fine having enough money around. So that's not a real big concern, but it is something that the business side has to figure out with everything going on. So with that, Nathan, I think that just about does it at the net front, huh?
Yeah, no more pucks for me to stop there, Matt.
All right. And with that, he's Nathan. I'm Matt. This is Net Front Presence. We'll see you next week.